Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
How we doing? You guys all right? Kind of? Sort of? Yeah? Okay. Hey, well, I got to ask you a question. Is there any movie that you think should be made? And I am not talking about that movie at the beginning of the service. That was really bad. But, like, is there, like, maybe some story from history or recent or a person's life that you think, man, they should totally make a movie from that? Anything? Because today I want to share with you a story, a true story, that absolutely has to be made into a movie. Like totally. And in fact, in this series, we're going to kind of sort of make it into a pseudo movie. And we'll have some fun with that. Now, this movie comes from the pages of the Bible, but it would have to be R-rated. I mean, this story has like 10 wild parties. It has drunkenness, sex, violence, attempted murder, political insurrection and intrigue. It's got everything except for it has no religion. And so this would be a blockbuster. It would just be huge. And the story comes from the Old Testament book of Esther, which is like in the middle of the Old Testament. We're just going to kind of go through that book, and you're going to love the story, and we're going to kind of make it into a movie, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this. And if I made it into a movie, I would call the movie In the Shadows. In the Shadows. And so that's what we're going to call the series. And so here's the deal, ready? So we're watching this movie, lights come up, scene one, act one. And the setting is a royal palace. It's like this castle, and it's quite impressive. And it's the setting for a royal party. I'm talking like a party. Now, the first character in the movie that we meet is King Xerxes, who is the king of Persia. If you've studied history, you're like, yeah, I remember King Xerxes. He reigned in Persia from 485 to 465 BC at a time when, like, Persia was the world power. I mean, they were the big boys on the block. Greece was kind of the up-and-coming giant killers, but Persia ruled. And his rule reigned from all the way from India in the east to Ethiopia in northern Africa. I mean, he ruled, like, most of the known world at the time. And if you saw the movie 300... if you remember, the 300 Spartans went against the vast armies of Persia, and the king of Persia in the movie was Xerxes, same guy. The Battle of Thermopylae, I have trouble saying that word, is what the movie 300 is about, and it took place in 480 BC, and it's the same king, Xerxes, same guy. So in this movie, we need to cast King Xerxes. And it was kind of difficult because there's not a lot of actors who are like the right age and distinguished enough to play a king. And so like Al Pacino's people called and he really wanted the part, but just not quite right. And also Gene Hackman was briefly considered, but in the end lost out to Sean Connery, who is going to be our King Xerxes. Like it or love it, he is King Xerxes in this little movie that we're going to create. And we learn quickly in the book of Esther that King Xerxes is a party animal. I mean, like crazy. He's a drinker. He's the kind of guy who says 24 beers in a case, 24 hours in a day. Coincidence? I think not. And he is a crazy dude. And in fact, let me ask you this. What is the longest party you've ever gone to in your life? Like, what is the longest party? I bet a lot of us would say, man, I've gone to a party that lasted all night, like into the next day, right? Well, we learn in the beginning of the book of Esther that King Xerxes invites all of his political and military leaders to a party, and it lasts, verse 4 tells us, if you want to open, if you have a Bible, you're good. If not, we'll put it on the screen. It lasts, verse 4, for a full 180 days. No joke. This is like real history. Think about that. How do you have a 180-day party? That's insane. I can't even get my mind wrapped around that. It's crazy, right? And so I can't even imagine. So after a 180-day party, what do you do? First of all, you've got a pretty serious hangover, I think. But what do? I think you crash, right? You collapse for like 7 or 8 weeks, I think the scale would say. You know, you just crash. But not King Xerxes. At the end of his 180-day party, he decides to kind of celebrate that party with another party. And so he has a party for 7 days. So now it's been 187 straight days of partying. I like how this party is described in verses 7 and 8 in Esther chapter 1. It says, wine was served. This is the second seven-day party. Wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other. So, like, there weren't, like, you know, like little red cups, you know, plastic cups. Like, everybody had their own special goblets. Yes. And the royal wine was abundant in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way. So some drank with their feet. Some were doing like beer bongs. I don't know what that means. I think it just means they could drink whatever they want. For the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. And so this party lasts for 187 days. It's crazy. And we're talking an all-out, kiss-the-porcelain, wild party. And so we're watching this in the movie. We're getting a feel for what's going on. And after 187 days of partying, King Xerxes is drunk. No. And in his drunken state, he does something stupid that he never would have done when he was sober. No. None of us have ever, right? No, I mean, that's just weird that somebody would do something like that. But what he does is he starts thinking of his queen. Check this out. In those days, at this kind of party, it would be an all-guy party. Now, we still have all-guy parties today, like bachelor parties, right? And guys hang out together, and that's a good thing, I guess. But a 187-day all-guy party, I don't think so. But that's what they did. They just had 187 guys hanging out, being guys, party. And what would happen is, at the same time, the queen would throw a party for all the wives and all her friends. And so they just had a 187-day lady party. And so Sean Connery, as King Xerxes, is drunk. It's been 187 days, and he starts thinking about his queen. Look at the beginning of verse. You know what? Let's cast the part first. So his queen is named Queen Vashti. Let's go to it. So verses 10 and 11. It says, on the seventh day. So that's the seventh day of the second party, 187th day of partying. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was high in spirits from wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him. Verse 11, to bring before him Queen Vashti wearing her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. And so now we have the part of Queen Vashti that we need to cast. One of the things we learn about Vashti here and elsewhere is that she was beautiful. And she's this queen. And I started to think about who should I cast for her. And I realized, wait a second, Vince, you are a smart guy and you're married. And it is not a good place for you to go to choose, like, who's the beautiful queen. So I got my wife. I said, hey, you're going to cast this part. She strongly considered and, like, called back several times Catherine Zeta-Jones. But in the end, gave the part of Queen Vashti to Angelina Jolie. All right? And so you guys knew that? So we have King Sean Connery, Xerxes. He's married to Vashti, who is Angelina Jolie. And after all this partying, he sends his eunuchs to go get her. Now, here's what's probably happening. What's probably going to happen is, and she would understand this, is he's going to have her come, and probably what she's going to have to do is do a dance before all these military and political leaders that he's been trying to impress for 187 days. And it's very likely that she was going to have to dance naked in front of all these men, because that's what he would do. He's showing off his girl and how great she is, and so he's going to have her do the lambada, the forbidden dance of love. Probably not. I don't think the lumbata was invented yet, but he's going to have her come. She's going to have to dance, probably naked. And so check out what happens in the beginning of verse 12. It says, but when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Mm-mm. And all the women said, amen, right? It's like, yeah, he doesn't have any right. You know, just because he's the king and just because he's, you know, drunk and he's Sean Connery and he says, get me a Vashti. I've been working on that all week for you guys. That's my drunk Sean Connery impersonation. Do you want me to do it again, anybody? I will, one more time. Ready for this? It's not very good, I realize, but I worked on it hard. Ready? Get me Vashti. A little bit, you can kind of sort of tell. Okay, so he says, get me Vashti. The eunuchs go running to get Vashti. She says, I ain't coming, right? And I think she's right. Nobody has the right to force you to do something wrong, but King Xerxes does not agree with me. At the end of verse 12 says, then the king became furious and burned with anger. He was like,
you will respect my authority.
There's like 8 or 9 South Park fans. I understand. Okay. He is not happy, right? He is like the leader of the world. No one says no to him. He is in charge. He is the authority of everyone. And his wife is going to say no with all these guys waiting for the dance. And he is furious. He is angry. And so what Xerxes does is he gets his lawyers together because he wants to talk to them about what can I do to punish my wife. Verse 15. He says, according to law, what must be done to Queen Vashti? He asked. She has not obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. And so really, he is just not a man to mess with. It doesn't matter. It's not that he's drunk. It's not that he's full of pride. It's not that he's angry. The problem is her insubordination, and he won't stand for it. And so what his advisors, his little board of lawyers here do is they exaggerate because they're just trying to get in good with the king. And so look at verses 17 and 18. They're talking about what's going to happen if he doesn't punish her. And they say, for the queen's conduct will become known to all the women. And so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. They're like cats and dogs will be fighting in the streets. It will be crazy. You have to punish her or everybody will start rebelling against their men. And they're just exaggerating and giving him an excuse to do what he's going to do anyway and what he wants to do. And so what happens next is Xerxes divorces Vashti and he banishes her from the kingdom. She is no longer able to show her face in Persia. And the lights go down. Scene 1, Act 1. And it's already kind of cool, right? I mean, we've got this like power-tripping king who's normally drunk. We've got this queen who has a mind of her own and you are not going to tell me what to do. We've got partying and we've got all kinds of crazy stuff going on. And in fact, the one thing we haven't got is God, right? And this is a book of the Bible, but it seems more like an episode of Jerry Springer, doesn't it? It's like today on Springer, my husband divorced me because I wouldn't dance naked in front of him and all his friends. Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. You read this, then you're like, what is going on here? This is the Bible? You know, it doesn't seem like the Bible. There's no God in it. In fact, check this out. In the entire book of Esther, God is never mentioned. It's in the Bible. It's right here in the middle of the Old Testament. God is never mentioned in the book of Esther. Name never appears. It's the only book in the Bible that's true of, by the way. But I want to tell you something. And if you stick with us for the next 2 weeks, you are going to see this in like living color. God is all over this book. His name does not appear in the script, but he is all over the book. He is in the background. He is orchestrating details. He's massaging the circumstances. And he is totally in the story. There's an old poet years ago who wrote this poem about God. And he said, God is in the shadows, keeping watch over his own. I think that's a real good image. And I think we see that in the book of Esther. God in the shadows, keeping watch over his own. And here's why it matters, and here's why I think this is such a profound book for our lives, is because I think all of us have times, and maybe you may be so new to this, it's still kind of like you're just trying to figure it out, but you'll get here someday, where you look at like stages of your life, seasons of your life, or areas of your life, and it seems like God is not there. Right? Like, you know, you could look at maybe your teenage years and say, man, if there was a script written about God, about my life, God's name would not appear. He was absent from my life. Or maybe right now you look at, I don't know, your marriage or your finances or your job, and you say, you know what? God has not shown up. God is not there. But I want to tell you this. You may not see God. He might not kind of come out and show himself. But he's there. God is in the shadows, and he keeps watch over his own. And I wonder, now, maybe looking back, if there are some things in your life where if you kind of looked at it in a different way, you might realize, I think God was there all the time. Like looking back, I can almost see how God was working out the details. So I would end up like in this place at this time, or so that would happen in my life. I mean, it almost had to be God. Like, check this out. In the mid-1980s, there was a guy, I've never met this guy, named Brent Curtis, who lived in Ohio. And Brent Curtis, in the mid-1980s, became a Christian. And he joined some sort of Christian church group, I don't know. And that Christmas, he gave his sister, Missy, who was like middle high school, a Bible. She was angry. She, you know, her brother's this new religious freak, and of course he's going to give me a Bible for Christmas. There's a lot of things I want and need for Christmas. I do not want or need a Bible. He gives her a Bible. She throws it with her stuff and just forgets about it. A couple years later, she starts applying for college, decides she wants to be a physical therapist, and she has this one school she wants to go to. She knows she can get in. She's sure of it. This is like her deal, like her whole life's pointing at going to this school. And then she gets this letter one day saying, hey, we're sorry to inform you, you have not been accepted from that school. She's shocked. It doesn't make any sense. But now she has to go to her second school, her second choice, which is the University of Buffalo. University of Buffalo is a big school, and during the summer, every week of the summer, they have freshman orientation weeks where they'll have hundreds, thousands of kids come and spend about 4 days doing all the orientation kind of stuff. Well, at her freshman orientation one night, she and two other girls were walking, and this guy up in a dorm window about 7 stories up looked down, happened to notice these three girls, and yelled up, hey, you guys need to come up here. We're on the 7th floor in this building room, whatever. We're having a party. Come on up. Well, for some reason, those three girls thought, yeah, we should go, which is really stupid. They don't know what's going on. It's a guy by himself who's up there. But they go up, and there is a party going on, and they go and they join it. And I happen to be at that party because that was my freshman orientation week as well. So we hung out, met all these different people. Party ended, freshman orientation week ended. 2 months later, go to school. And on like the first or second day of school, I'm walking along, and I bump into this girl, Missy Curtis. And I was like, I met you at orientation. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, it was at that party, I think. And she's like, yeah, exactly. And so we start talking. I'm like, man, we should like hang out or something. I don't know anybody here. She's like, I don't know anybody here. And so we started hanging out. And then we started dating. And we dated for several years. And actually, 2 years later, on Easter morning, my sophomore year of college, she and I were supposed to go out for brunch. She was late. I turned on the TV, every channel, because we didn't have cable. We got cable the next year. But we didn't have cable, and there was only 3 channels, and they all had on stupid religious shows. I watched one for a minute. This guy said the dumbest thing I ever heard. He was talking about Jesus, and he said there's evidence to prove when something happened. I'm like, what are you talking about? Evidence? Evidence? Because I was a pre-law major, and I was into that, and I was like, you're nuts, man. And then knocking the door, like 1 minute later, and it was Missy, and so we went out and hung out that day. And that night, I noticed that she had a Bible on her bookshelf. And I was like, can I borrow that Bible? And she's like, you can have it. I've never opened it. My brother gave it to me years ago. Jerk. And I was like, cool, I can borrow it. She's like, take it. And it was actually a student Bible. He gave her a student Bible, which is designed for teenagers. And when he gave it to her, she was a teenager. But a student Bible kind of helps people who are absolutely new to the Bible to kind of find their way around it, which was great because I had no idea what I was doing. And so it helped me kind of find the life of Jesus and look at that. And I spent several months studying the Bible and ended up deciding it was true and that I wanted to follow Jesus. And so here's the question. What if Brent Curtis didn't become a Christian? What if Brent Curtis didn't give his sister a Bible? He'd given her what she wanted. What if she had gotten that Bible and just thrown it out the way she wanted to? What if she hadn't brought it to college? What if she'd gotten into her first college, her first choice of college, and gone there? What if she had a different week of freshman orientation? What if that guy hadn't noticed them, looked out the window at that moment and noticed these girls 7 stories down and invited them up? What if they had been wise and said, no, we're not going up to some room with some guy yelling down at us? What if I wasn't at that party? What if 2 months later we didn't bump into each other on the first day of school? What if she wasn't late for brunch? What if we had cable TV because I would have watched anything else? What if she didn't have that Bible on the shelf? What if I didn't notice it? What if it wasn't a student Bible and I just started in Genesis and just gave up? A whole string of coincidences? Maybe. But I think it was a whole string of God incidences. I think God was working years in advance in people's lives that I had no idea would never meet to get me to this place right here, right now. And if you look back at your life, you would see the same thing. And here's something cool too. Right now, there are things happening. There are events happening in this world with people you probably have never met and may never meet that are gonna directly influence your life. And someday you're gonna look back and put together all the pieces and connect the dots and be like, wow, I had no idea. I mean, I felt alone. I felt purposeless. I felt like God wasn't paying any attention. And the whole time God was working in the shadows of my life, orchestrating the details, massaging the circumstances, keeping watch over his own. All right, you ready? Scene one, act two. If act one is about an unusual event that God uses, a party, scene two is about an unusual person that God uses. We learn as scene two unfolds that it's been 4 years since scene one, since Vashti was banished from the kingdom. And Xerxes is starting to feel it a little bit, like he started to suffer just a little. He suffered a few minor defeats to the Greeks, and he's realizing this may not last forever, and he's lonely. 4 years now without a queen, and he's realizing I was stupid when I made that choice way back then. And his advisors, sensing his despondency, kind of float a suggestion. They're like, hey, king, we've been talking, and we kind of, maybe you're a little bit lonely, maybe. And so we had this idea. What if we arranged for a beauty pageant, and whoever wins the beauty pageant becomes your queen? And so you will have the most beautiful woman in the land. And King Xerxes says, yes, I like this. That didn't sound anything like Sean Connery. That was sad. I don't know what that sounded like. But he says, okay, let's do it. Yeah, we're on. And so they agree to do this, and this beauty pageant is staged. And there's this man who now enters the movie, who enters his cousin into the beauty pageant. Verse 7, chapter 2, says this. It says, Mordecai, next character, had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. This girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. Okay, so we have some new parts we need to cast in this movie. The first is Mordecai, who we're going to get to know in the next 2 weeks, and this was just the easiest part for me to cast, and I don't know why, but Ben Kingsley is Mordecai. Like, just trust me, he's perfect, and so Ben Kingsley is Mordecai. But we also have to cast the part of Esther, and we're going to learn that Esther is the most beautiful woman in, like, Persia, and so, again, I got enough brain power to go, I don't think I should be making this choice. That sounds like dangerous. And so I said to my wife, you get to cast the part of Esther. Congratulations. And so she had like all kinds of people she was calling about this part. And she actually had Anne Hathaway come back for several callbacks. But in the end, she chose Emily Blunt. And if you don't like it, talk to her, not me. But Emily Blunt, who was in The Wolfman and Devil Wears Prada. And I didn't know who she was when she told me Emily Blunt is Esther. I was like, huh? Who? But Emily Blunt is Esther. And so we're going to get to know Esther. And what we're going to discover, I'll kind of give you a little bit of a clue of what's going to happen. She becomes a major player, not only for God and his purposes in this world, but in all of human history. Like Esther becomes someone huge in the course of human history. But as we get to know Esther in this book or this movie, you would never, never guess that she would be the kind of person who would be positioned for like power and influence in this world. And she has had a bunch of strikes against her. Like first, she was Jewish. And at this time, the Jews were conquered foreigners. They no longer had their own country, their own king, their own people. They lived in Persia, and they were like, they had no rights. They couldn't vote. They had no power. They had no country. And so being Jewish, you had no opportunity to be in a position of power. Second, she was a woman. And back then, in that time, we're not talking about today, but in that time, women were not given rights. They were not given positions of influence. I mean, if you're a woman, you weren't going to have very good, you know, luck in this world. And if you go to the Middle East today, where this takes place, things haven't changed a whole lot. And so she was a woman, and so that's strike two in this time, in this age. Third, she was an orphan. Now, her cousin Mordecai had very graciously taken her in and raised her as his own, but still, she had no parents to talk to look to. She had, you can only imagine that she probably had some self-doubts and some esteem issues because, you know, she didn't have parents, and that's got to be difficult. And so, strike three. She's Jewish. She's a woman. She's an orphan. And you just look at that and you're like, she is not the kind of person who is going to become a major influencer in this world. But you know what? In God's economy, she was perfectly positioned to become a major player in this world. Because with God, and you see this all through the Bible and ever since, you never know who God is going to use. I mean, God uses people who do not seem like the kind of person you'd say, that's the person, that's the guy, that's the girl. But God does things different. You never know who God is going to use. Now, Esther does have one thing going for her, we discover, and it's her beauty. Her beauty. We find out she is beautiful. But that's really interesting because we don't think a whole lot, most of us probably, of people who use their beauty to get ahead in life. It's like, come on, use your character, your personality, use your talent. Don't use your appearances. But that's what she had going for her. And God tells us in the Bible that beauty is not something he considers important at all. And that he doesn't want us to use our beauty to get ahead in life and to focus on beauty. And so it's really an odd thing that it's Esther's beauty that ends up being what God uses in his plan. But with God, not only do you not know who God will use, you don't know what God will use. So as the story starts unfolding and we meet Esther, she quickly does two things that we have to believe are not in God's will. What happens in the story is first, she compromises spiritually. What happens as she enters into this beauty pageant to become the next queen, she hides her nationality. She hides the fact that she is an Israelite, a Jew, because the Israelites are the people who believe in and worship God. And she realizes, if I announce that, if I let them know that, the king would never choose me. And he wants a woman who worships him, not God. And so I'm just going to hide my faith. And God tells us in the Bible, he wants us to be proud of our faith and that he wants us to, put God first. But she doesn't do that. She compromises spiritually. The second thing she does is she compromises sexually. What we find in the story is that part of this beauty pageant that they designed for the king is that each woman spends a night with the king. And so there was the talent competition, the bathing suit competition, that evening gown competition. But that was part of the deal of how you became queen, is you had to show the king what you had in that category as well. In the Bible, God tells us that he is so committed to his care for single people, and he values them so highly that he tells us that single people shouldn't have sex with somebody who's not that committed to them and doesn't value them enough to marry them. But Esther just kind of throws that out the window because she wants to become queen. And so she compromises spiritually, she compromises sexually. And you might think, hearing all that and realizing, okay, I'm seeing where the story's going. Esther's going to become a big deal and God's going to use her. And so you might get the idea that the point is, man, God will use you no matter what you do, I guess. But that's not the lesson here. The point here is that God can even use someone like Esther, which means that God can even use someone like me and like you. If you look at your life and you've got strikes against you, maybe you come from the wrong background. Maybe you didn't grow up in church, and so you're kind of new to this, and you're figuring it out, and you're like, God could never use somebody like me. I don't even know the Bible. Like, how could I ever be used by God? Or maybe you've been abused. Maybe your parents are divorced. Maybe you've been divorced. Whatever it is, and you just look at your life, and you're like, it's such a mess. And maybe you've compromised spiritually. Maybe you have no spiritual life, or maybe you do, and that's the problem, because you're not living it, and you feel like you're just a hypocrite. And you think, all of that disqualifies me from really being used by God. It's not true. And it's one of the incredible things about the story of Esther. It's like, you know what? If God would choose Esther and use Esther with all the strikes she had, with all the compromising she did, well then, man, maybe God would use someone like me. Maybe he could choose someone like me. One more thing. This is cool. Before Esther or any of the other women went in to see the king and have their moment with him, check out verse 12. It says, before a girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil of myrrh, and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. Oh my goodness. Guys, you think your girl takes a long time to get ready to go out? Can you imagine if it's 12 months? It's like, wait a second, honey, I just need 12 months to get ready. It's crazy. But it's not only kind of funny, it also probably was kind of torturous, like for Esther. Don't you think? I mean, like, she's waiting for, like, what's going to happen with my life, right? Like, I want to become queen. I've got this shot at becoming queen, and if not, I got to go and do whatever else I'm going to do. And then she has to wait 12 months to find out what's next for me. And she may not realize it. She probably doesn't, but it's a lot more than becoming queen. I mean, she is moving into God's story. She is moving into this place where she is going to be able to be used by God in an unbelievable way. But she has to wait 12 months to get there. And you know, this is the way with God. We don't like it, especially in our microwave culture. But the deal with God is that he often makes us wait. He does. I did a study once of the word wait in the Bible. I'm like, I wonder how many times the word wait appears in the Bible. And there's like little books and internet kind of stuff that you can use to find out. It's like hundreds and hundreds of times that God tells us to wait. See, the deal with God is he never hurries, but he's never late. God has perfect timing. And his perfect timing sometimes requires us to wait. And so maybe you have to wait for the results of the surgery to come in, for the job you really want, for that phone call. Maybe you have to wait for the right person to marry and you think it's been too long already. Man, wait and be patient with God. He never hurries, but he's never late. And while you wait, I would encourage you to do what Esther does here. She's waiting, but she's preparing herself. I don't even know what it means. Oil of myrrh treatments, perfumes, cosmetics I get, but oil of myrrh treatments, I don't know what that means. But she, the whole 12 months, she's preparing herself for this moment. And that's what we need to do as we wait. If right now your story kind of has you, the script you're in, right, like your little movie, has you in this waiting stage where you're like, what is next? Why won't God come through for me? Why won't God give me what I'm asking him for? Be patient, wait for God, and in the meantime, prepare for that moment. You know, stay close to God, get closer to God, learn more about him, draw closer to him, pray, so that when the time comes, whatever it is, you are ready. You're ready. Well, finally, the big day came for Esther. She had to wait 12 months, but finally the day arrives. She goes into the king. He does all his testing, and he decides that she is his next queen. She is the queen. And what we're going to discover in the weeks to come is that puts her in the perfect position to be used by God. A string of coincidences, the whole thing with the party and Vashti and Mordecai, maybe. But I think it was a whole string of God instances. And so King Xerxes chooses Esther to become his queen, and guess what he does next? He throws a party, right? And so you can, if you want to, kind of picture this scene in the movie with like Sean Connery and Emily Blunt doing the twist. It's like, she's a brick house. I don't know. And so they have this huge party. And what happens next after the party is crazy. I mean, like the craziest, wildest things you've ever heard. But to hear them, you have to come back next week. And so we're going to pick up the story next week, and I'm telling you, it is going to get good, and you're going to say, there has to be a movie made of this. This is too good. But before we leave, let me just make sure that you got, like, the application to take home with you, all right? Because this isn't just a cool story. This is personal for you and me. And so here's, like, the big application I would encourage you to really kind of sit at home with this week. Never underestimate what God will use. Never underestimate what God will use. Like in this story, it's a party. You know, if you think, what is God going to use? You never go, probably a party. But God uses a party. And it may be a party that God uses in your life. It was in mine, you know, on the seventh floor of a dorm. It may be, I don't know. It may be a day at the beach for you. It may be your drive into work one day. It might be a phone call. It might be a business meeting. You have no idea what events God might use in your life. Don't underestimate it and be ready. And also, don't underestimate the gifts that God might use in your life. Like with Esther, she doesn't have any great gifts. She's just pretty. And you might go, I wish I was pretty. It's not a big deal to be pretty. God tells us that, but that's the gift that God uses in her life. And you have no idea what gifts God might use in your life. In fact, you might be sitting here and kind of getting an idea. I think he's saying that, like, I could become this major player for God and do incredible things. Not me. I'm not gifted like that. I'm not the kind of person who's going to go up on stage. I'm not a speaker or a singer. I don't have those kind of gifts and those kind of abilities. That's fine. You have no idea what God might use in your life. Whatever gifts and abilities, whatever talents, whatever resources he's given you, don't underestimate what God can use in your life. And you might even think, God can't use me. I mean, you don't understand. I'm not this. I don't have that in my path. Look at Esther. Look at Esther. She's from the wrong background, the wrong nationality, the wrong gender. She compromises spiritually. She has nothing going for her. But God chooses her, and he uses her. And if you look through the Bible, and we will, you stick with us, we'll look through lots of these stories, what you'll find is that the people God uses throughout the Bible and throughout history since, including now, are people who are incredibly ordinary. Ordinary, but God uses them in extraordinary ways. They're people who are just willing to stay close to God and trust him and say, God, I don't have much to offer, but if you want to use me, here I am. And I'm just going to follow your path and try to stay in step with you. And if you're someone who's willing to do that, man, watch out, because God will use you in incredible ways as he works in your life in the shadows. Let's pray. God, I love this story. It's just so cool because we see you working without your name mentioned. And I just know there are times in my life where it's just like, God, where are you? Why won't you answer me? Why is my life so crazy right now and out of control? Why can't you show up? But we learn in this book, and we will see this vividly in the next couple weeks, that you were working in Esther's life, in the situations, in the events, without showing your hand, you are working in the shadows. And God, I'm convinced you're working in the shadows of our lives as well. God, it's so easy for us to underestimate who you'll use and what you'll use and to think, you only use the special people, the stars and the special gifts. But God, the truth is, we see it all through the Bible that you use ordinary people with ordinary abilities to do extraordinary things. And it just gives you more glory. And so would you help us to learn that lesson and to be ready to be used by you? Thanks for being a great God who loves us and wants to do something special with our lives. And we pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.